Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another beautiful Thursday evening here in Sherman Oaks, California. I am Jim Christina, your host for The Writer's Block, and we are here on LA Talk Radio, and I'm in studio with Russ Avison.
Hello, Jimmy.
Hello, Russie. Hey, I have a question for you.
Uh-oh.
This is a dog question, because, of course, you are a dog trainer.
Yes.
What do I do to keep my dog from coming up and flipping me your ass all the time and wanting to have her butt scratched?
Stop scratching it.
It's easier said than done.
Oh my God,
she's horrible.
Ah. So you could, do you not want to do it, or is it she's just doing it all the time?
Well, she's getting excessive about it.
No. I would, actually, you know what you could do? You could teach her a behavior that says when she comes over to see you, teach her a signal that says, now I'm going to scratch your butt.
Oh, okay.
So that sounds really terrible.
It does.
That way.
It does.
To scratch her hind.
Yeah, her hind quarters. Yeah.
And if you teach her a signal, like a cue, like, okay, now, or scratch, or whatever you call it, and then she'll only offer that when you ask for the behavior.
Well, you know, it's really funny, because she'd be walking around, and I say, Belle, you want your butt scratched? And she immediately hits my chair and flips around and goes, okay.
Wow. Well, I would pair that with like a click and a treat so that you can get her to tie in. And I
excellent.
Think that should help you out.
Excellent. Excellent. We are going to kind of get through our stuff pretty quick this evening, because this is a very special writer's
block. Okay, before you go, I got to take 30 seconds and tell you, I just got back from Salem, Oregon.
Okay. Oh, that's right. You were at the eclipse. Okay.
And I got to tell you, if anybody who's listening, if you've never seen one, you need to plan to go to the one in 2024. It's going to go through Dallas, Texas. It's going up to Carbondale, Illinois, which the odds of this happening, but Carbondale had the total eclipse this time on the 21st, and they're having another one in 7 years.
Oh, wow.
But it is an experience that you can't even describe.
Really?
It's amazing. When the total eclipse happens, it gets dark like night.
Yeah.
And you know what it looks like just when the sun sets behind the mountain, right? Imagine that same look of that twilight, but 360 degrees around you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's an awesome experience.
Wow. Well, my brother and sister-in-law live in Lebanon, Oregon.
Uh-huh.
So they were sitting out in their front yard drinking beer and watching the eclipse.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. So that was it.
Okay.
Move on. I know we've got a great show tonight.
Okay. Well, the Writer's Block is brought to you by Tuscany Bay Books. And here at Tuscany Bay, we're here to help the new writer, the brand new writer, and one that's not quite sure what he wants to do with his materials. And we can help you format, proofread, copyright, all of the stuff that takes into getting your book on the shelf. So if you are interested in writing, or you've already written and you don't know what to do with it, give us a call. The number there is 805-795-3165, or the website is www.blackdogpublishing.co. And we're here also by Out West, which is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include Scully Leather Company, Rockmount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Their number, toll-free, is 877-340-9378. And if you are interested in their concert series in Newhall, that number is 661-347-9700. And they are going to have their show is tomorrow night. It's every fourth Friday of the month. And tomorrow night they have John Zipperer. I understand from Bobby Jean that it is an outstanding musician and songwriter. So if you tell them that you heard this ad on the Writer's Block, the tickets go from $25 to $20. So there you go. If you are interested in going to that number is 661-347-9700. And since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM Truckload. That's the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 1-844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski. Tell him you heard it here on the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible is what you want. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry. So call at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL today. Okay, tonight's guest is a man who's been around a couple days. He's a New York Times bestselling author of 12 full-length novels in the Longmire Mystery Series, as well as two novellas and a collection of stories featuring the beloved sheriff. His acclaimed books have won the Western Writers of America Spur Award, the Will Rogers Medallion Award for Fiction, the Watson Award for Mystery Novel with the Best Sidekick, and the Wyoming Historical Association's Book of the Year Award. They have been named Best Books of the Year by Publishers Weekly. Library Journal Spirit of Steamboat was chosen as the first One Book Wyoming selection. The series, as most of you already know, has been on TV for 5 seasons, and it is moving into its sixth. And if you want to talk to this particular author this evening, the number here is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Craig Johnson. Craig, you with us?
Hey, good to be here.
Hey, it's great to have you, man.
Hey, welcome, Craig. I have to ask you, though, Craig, I heard all this wonderful stuff about you. Why are you talking to us?
I was just sitting here listening to you guys go through the ads, and I was sitting there thinking, my gosh, this show is custom fit for me. Like, you know, it's all about writing and Western wear. Like,
there you
I mean,
go.
My gosh, like, you know, I drive a little bit of truck myself. Like,
yeah, well,
I'm like, good grief, this is like a perfect fit. Like,
there you go.
I'm just delighted to be here. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. As I told you, what was it, yesterday I talked to you? That I just finished your new novel, and wow, it's a huge surprise for the Longmire fans and for the people of the media.
It's a little bit of a beast. Look at it. It's a little bit different from any of the others before. Like that, I mean, the structure is reminiscent of one of the other books. Like that, but it's different once again.
Uh-huh.
I think that's you know one of the tricks. I mean, whenever you're doing a series of books, you know, you really can't kind of rest on your laurels, you know, and fall back on the you know the idea of like you know doing something formulaic. You really have to kind of like you know push the envelope a little bit and try and do something different.
Well, you did.
Thank you.
you most certainly did. And I told you just before we went on the air, you left me hanging. I just was sitting there, and I was turning pages, and all of a sudden there wasn't no more pages. I'm going, no!
Well, that's kind of one of the fun things to do with the books. Like, I mean, some people pick up on it, some people don't. Like that, but you know, one of the things I try and do with the page breaks and the chapter breaks, and even with the you know the books themselves, look at is that you know it's kind of an homage, like at to those serial westerns, you know, to a certain extent.
Right.
I always like dropping a piece of information or a bit of action or something at the end, so you get just a little bit of a cliffhanger, like at to you know propel you on, you know, to that next you know past the page break or past the chapters or on into the next book.
Right,
and,
right.
Hopefully it helps. Hopefully it like makes for a good reading experience.
Well, it took you from modern day to 1972 and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And as it's going, you're finding out more and more and more and finding out how much relevance is between these two times.
And, oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, that was kind of one of the tricks, you know, with that particular type of book. Whenever you're doing, like, a split narrative, you know, of different time periods, like, I mean, there are a couple of rules you have to play by. And,
right.
You know, one is that if you are going to tell two different stories at the same time, there has to be some kind of a connection between those two stories.
Right.
There has to be some, you know, something that, you know, combines them together to make it worthwhile trying to tell those two stories at the same time. And then, you know, you're going to have the difficulties of, trying to, you know, have a sequeled pacing, like at something that, you know, where, you know, the trouble with those type of books is generally people get, you know, very excited about one of the storylines and then aren't excited about the other.
Right.
Excuse me. Like, and so then what they end up doing is, like, skipping pages to get back to the storyline that they're interested in, like that. But if you can combine the two so that, you know, you're actually giving clues, you know, to each story, you know, from the other story, then it kind of makes it a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, it was an interesting scenario, and I don't know how much you do or do not want to talk about this book, because I think it's out next month, right?
It's a tricky business.
I know, huh? You know,
I mean, I'd love to talk about all of it, but I don't want to give any of the major.
I know, I don't either. So either. I'm trying to be very careful about what I say. But I know that this book is due for release in September, and you are going to be on a tour.
Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, I think we start out in Orange County. We're right
you
here,
do? You
right
do?
Right here in Los Angeles. I think on the 5th, I believe it is.
Tuesday, September 5th. That's right. And that's at 7 p.m. at the Book Carnival. And then the next day, Wednesday, September 6th at 4 p.m., you're at the Rancho Mirage Library. And that, for our listeners who have no idea where Rancho Mirage is, it's like 12,000 miles past Palm Springs in the desert.
Big town.
You ought to have a lot of fun there, Craig. Actually, the bookie and I are going to try to get out there to see you.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Like, it was you know, an interesting book. Like, to try and take on, like, it. I mean, one of the things that was interesting for me was that the whole idea of, like, you know, a compressed kind of narrative like that with, you know, somebody like Walt, you know, kind of trapped on a train.
Right.
And whenever I started thinking about that, I heard about, you know, this one train that had taken place, like, at historically, like that with energy engineers, like at in the 1960s, in the 50s and 60s, where they would load these, you know, energy engineers onto the train, like in Cheyenne, like that, and run them all the way out to Evanston, where they had a couple of power plants that they were putting in, and all of this. And I thought, well, what if you got a whole train load of sheriffs? Wouldn't that be interesting, like that, you know? And then poor Walt, of course, is the only deputy in this, like, entire train of sheriffs that runs all the way across the expanse of Wyoming and back. And the story starts off, like, of course, you know, with Walt doing a weapons recertification down at the Law Enforcement Academy in Douglas. And one of the big things there is that when you finish up, you go over to the Labonte Hotel and in their bar, like, and celebrate by having a drink, you know, if you make your certification. And so they all head over there, like, and the thing about the Labonte Hotel bar is that there are all of these photographs and tintypes and wanted posters and everything of historical, you know, Wyoming law enforcement all over the walls. And one of the sheriffs, younger sheriff, happens to look over Walt's shoulder and sees a photograph of, you know, 24 armed men standing in front of a steam locomotive, like an 844 Northern locomotive, the only steam locomotive never retired from a major rail line in the United States. Still actually in use, you know, today, as a matter of fact, for excursions out of Cheyenne. And, you know, this younger sheriff looks over Walt's shoulder and says, "Is that you on the end?" And Walt turns around and sees this photograph and says, "Yeah, that's when I got back from Vietnam, and Lucian had hired me, and I'd only been working for him for 2 weeks, and he invited me to go on the sheriff's train, you know, the Western Star, all the way across Wyoming and back." And you know, the younger sheriff looks at Walt and goes, "24 armed sheriffs on a train," and Walt
and alcohol.
Says, "When we started." So
when we started,
and alcohol,
getting a little more complicated from that point on.
I can quite figure out that the sheriffs drink a hell of a lot more than the engineers did.
Oh yes, absolutely. Like, it's a junket for them. Like, it's not really a job. Like,
well, sure.
Things started getting a little bit serious later on. So
sure,
they're kind of enjoying themselves. Like, it gets a little bit more complex as the storyline goes on, because of course, you know, we're jumping back and forth, you know, as the story progresses. Like, you know, between Walt's visit with his daughter down in Cheyenne and the contemporary day, like, and then also his experiences back in 1972. So we keep flipping back and forth. Like,
right.
He's actually there, like, for a parole hearing to make sure that there's a prisoner that he put into jail, you know, back in 1972, put into prison, actually, and he's making sure in these parole hearings that that individual never sees the light of day.
Right, and compassionate
and
release.
That's kind of vindictive for Walt. It's kind of a severe kind of situation, and so you start wondering, okay, well, you know, there must be some kind of a personal connection, you know, with this particular individual in this particular case, and why is that, you know, and as
right.
we go through the information and start discovering who this person is and what it is that happened, there's some good motivations for what it is that Walt does.
You know, something that I haven't read the new book, but I just finished reading Dark Horse, and
mm-hmm.
and believe it or not, my girlfriend is the one who got me introduced to the series on television, you know, Longmire. And
uh-huh.
so I had watched two episodes, which were probably season three or four, but I also just finished watching the pilot of the series. And
uh-huh.
one of the things, and you mentioned it here about this, you know, Walt being vindictive and wanting to get back at this guy, that's what makes him such a great character, is so often you show his flaws. And I really like that. I mean, it made him so real.
Yeah, he's not perfect. Look at it. He's not perfect. Look at it. And I think anybody who faced, you know, with the kind of situation that Walt was faced with, you know, would maybe respond in that same manner like that. But, you know, from the very beginning, you know, I really didn't want Walt to be that, you know, 6'2" of twisted steel and sex appeal kind of character. I wanted him to be flawed. You know,
uh-huh.
I wanted him to be like us. Like
right.
that. The way I kind of refer to Walt in the first place, you know, whenever I first started writing the books is he's over. He's overweight. He's overage. He's overly depressed. You know, but he still gets up in the morning and attempts to do the job. You know, and for me, that's what makes him kind of like an everyman kind of character and much more interesting. The old saying goes, like, that you know, we like people for their virtues, but we love people for their faults.
Right.
You know, and it's just a question of, you know, which direction those things are going to take you and how far they're going to take you.
All right, well, I want to ask you a little bit about the show, if I may, because I see kind of a contrast between the characters you introduce in the books and then what turned out to be in the TV program. Because Walt,
uh-huh.
in the television program, he's not overweight. He looks a bit younger than I expected him to be. And
he's Australian.
And he's Australian.
Hey, well, there is that. Like that, but you'd never know it like that from when he's on the show. Like,
no, you're
wrong.
I got to
be honest with you. One of the first, we had a really great group of producers like that on the show that allowed me to be, you know, probably a lot more involved, you know, with the process than maybe they should have. They probably learned a lot, you know, from working with me for like, you know, for the last, you know, 6 years. But they're just a fantastic group. Like that. I mean, Greer Shepherd, you know, Hunt Ball. And John Coveney, like it. I mean, they had a track record, you know, with Nip Tuck, The Closer, all of these really incredible shows, like that. And then, whenever they brought me on, you know, I started asking them questions too, like that. And it was kind of a steep learning curve for me because, you know, come on, I'm a cowboy author from a town of 25 in northern Wyoming, you know, and so I don't know a lot about Hollywood, I don't know a lot about television and movies and all of that, and so I just kind of had to learn as I went. And they were very patient with me, and it was interesting because one of the big altercations that we had right off from the get-go. They said, you know, well, we're thinking about making Walt and Henry about 10 years younger than they are in the books. And I got my redneck cowboy author response on where I was like, well, now why are we doing that? And they said, well, because we'd really like the show to run for about 10 years, and we'd rather not have Walt and Henry on walkers by the time we get to the end of the run. Like, and so I had a hard time arguing that point, you know. I think a lot of things that, you know, yet come into play. I think it's interesting because, you know, you always hear the horror story from authors, you know, who've had their work adapted. And I think a lot of that, you know, the equal blame can go on both sides,
uh-huh.
because I think a lot of authors go into it, you know, with kind of unrealistic expectations that everything should be exactly the way it is in their books. You know, well, you're really talking about two different art forms like that, you know, and to try and slavishly reproduce everything that's in books, you know, really I don't think, you know, would inform a television show very well. Another thing that the producer said to me from, you know, in the very first meetings that we had at Warner Brothers was, they said, your books don't break down into a 42-minute teleplay very easily. And my immediate response was, thank God.
Yeah,
if they
yeah.
did, you really shouldn't be reading them like that.
Right.
So I think we all kind of went into it with our eyes open, knowing that there were going to be some changes that were going to be made.
Well, I found, too, that it, as you mentioned, they're two separate art forms, and I looked at them differently and enjoyed them both just as much, even though they were different. So
right.
I don't think that's really critical. I did kind of miss the fact now that Vic was quite a bit toned down from the way she is in the book.
Well, the problem with doing Vic with the language that she has in the books is we'd have to be on Cinemax at 2 in the morning.
Right.
That's what we would have to do.
Right.
So they kind of had to tone her down a little bit. But Katie Sackhoff, you know, if you watch Katie Sackhoff and listen to her under her breath, there are quite a few times where she appears to have gotten by the censors, you know, and by the networks and by the studios, look at it, and then squeezed a few pieces in that maybe weren't on the page, look at, you know, so that's kind of nice. I guess she was a pretty miraculous performer, like an amazing performer, like getting just an astounding actress too. Like, I mean, a lot of times, you know, I think a lot of people miss the fact that how good she is just simply because she looks the way she does. Like, you kind of tend to focus on the way she looks, and
right.
You know what? She's a really good actress. You know, right underneath that is there are so many layers of what it is that she does that it's kind of amazing. Like, we were very fortunate. I mean, the casting on the show with Robert Taylor, with Katie, with Lou Diamond Phillips, you know, with Adam Bartley, look at, and you know, Cassidy Freeman and A. Martinez, look at, I mean, you know, Zahn McLaren. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I mean, all of the incredible performers that we got. Look,
right.
It was interesting to see how they were able to develop the characters, you know, in different ways maybe than they are in the novels. But I think you've got to be open to that. I mean, with any kind of, you know, job, with any kind of work, it's like anything else. It's kind of like a ranch to a certain extent.
Sure.
I mean, what you do is you get the very best people that you can possibly get, and then you do the hardest thing in the world. Leave them alone.
Yeah.
Let them do what they do.
Right.
Like, you know, for me to try and micromanage, you know, everything about this TV series and everything about what the actors and directors and writers were all doing, like that, I mean, that would have kind of been foolish. I mean, they were very wonderful, you know, because, I mean, that's where I kind of was able to help out as a creative consultant. What they would do is that when they would, you know, get together in the off season and discuss, you know, what the season arc is going to be and, you know, the episode arcs and all of that. And then we would, you know, they would sit down in the writer's room, like that, and they have a group of writers that writes, like that, and then what they would do is send me the episodes, and then I would go through, look at, and give them feedback on all of those. And we would agree on some stuff, and we would disagree on other stuff, but they were always very patient, look at, and would tell me, you know, why it was that they were doing the things that they were doing that might be a little bit different from the book.
It's the casting of Henry Standing Bear, I thought, was phenomenal.
Lou
Diamond Phillips is perfect in that part.
Even with the auditions, I mean, they actually sent me the DVDs of the auditions, you know, for the actors that they were considering. And I remember when they sent me the DVD, you know, with Lou Diamond Phillips, you know, I remember looking at the DVD folder and saying, well, he's way too young and too skinny to play Henry. And then we put the DVD in, and we're watching his audition, and I was like, when was La Bamba? That was a while back.
Yeah,
I
was in the 80s, I think.
You know, not
early
that Lou's
90s,
in great shape. Like, I mean, he spends about 4 hours a day, you know, at the working out. Like, so he's in fantastic shape. Like, but he is a carbon-based life form, and like the rest of us, he does age like everybody else. And so, it was kind of wonderful that he, you know, came into the audition. And he actually, it was interesting because all of the other native actors, like, had auditioned for the role, in the audition sequence, like, there were three contractions, an isn't, a wasn't, and a don't. And the people who read the books know that Henry doesn't use contractions.
No,
right?
He doesn't.
Use
it. Uh-huh.
And so, for me, it was very interesting because Lou Diamond Phillips came in, like, he did his audition, and he took the three contractions out. And I was like, he's read my books. And when I met him, he was like, I discovered, like, that he had actually gone out. Whenever he discovers that a piece that he's auditioning for has a literary background, he'll go back and read the seminal work. You know, and for a lot of actors, that's, you know, that's kind of a taboo. Like,
right.
They don't want to do that because they don't want to be confused. Like, but Lou absorbed, like, at the first three books and really loved the character of Henry.
Right.
And, you know, really, really wanted to play that role like that. And his audition, you know, was just phenomenal. Like, just, it's just really amazing. Like that. And he's an incredibly smart guy. Like that. And so he's actually become my, the guy that goes through my books and looks for contractions. Because every once in a while when I'm doing a draft, like that, I might make a mistake and leave a contraction in. And I actually have a celebrity editor who goes through and finds the contractions for me, Lou Diamond Phillips. Like, he's worth his weight in gold.
I actually ran into him at a BevMo in Simi Valley one afternoon.
Oh, okay. You know what? He is so approachable and so friendly.
He really is, and he's big.
And
he's tall.
Incredibly intelligent, you know, very knowledgeable. I mean, about, you know, literature, film, art,
yep.
Food. Don't ever get into a poker game with him.
No,
he's also a world class poker player. So don't ever let him lure you onto a table or anything. All right.
Yeah, he was. I think he was filming a movie back in the backside of Simi Valley, and he was in BevMo buying alcohol. And he's a tall guy, and he was wearing a baseball cap, trying to keep people from noticing who he was.
Trying to take a low profile.
Yeah, but he opens his mouth and you can tell who it is.
Since they filmed the TV show over in Santa Fe, they didn't have Rainier beer in Santa Fe, so they had to go to BevMo, as a matter of fact, there in Los Angeles, and ship an entire truck jack of Rainier beer over to Santa Fe for use, during the filming of the television show. And it was kind of funny because I was talking to Dave, the prop guy, and he said at the filming when they first started the season, they had an entire truck jack of all this Rainier beer, and they were going through it at a phenomenal rate. And so he finally had to make an announcement, to all the extras, at one of the Red Pony Bar and Grill scenes, and said, "Hey, all you extras that are just in the background back there, don't drink the beer, all right? Don't drink the beer." And so he thought he'd solve the problem but then the beer kept getting depleted, on a daily basis. And he was like, "What in the heck is going on?" And so he was going through there, and he's turning off the lights, and he sees somebody drifting through, a shadow kind of drift through the Red Bar and snag a 12-pack off the top of, the Rainier beer pile for the season. And he goes, hey, and he runs out the door, and catches him just as the guy's going through the door. It was Robert Taylor. He was boosting a 12-pack every night and taking it home, like a true good Australian, and, powering through it as he was learning his lines. And so that was the case of the missing Rainier that was kind of, figured out.
Well, it's great that they drink Rainier, because I love Rainier beer. I mean, I'm not a big beer drinker, but I was in the Northwest for years, and I just right there off the freeway, and I just love Rainier.
Oh no, it's a good working class beer.
It is.
I knew that, Budweiser and Coors didn't need my help. but here about 13 years ago, Rainier was kind of going through some tough times.
Yep.
And it didn't look like they were going to even make it. And I thought, I'm going to do them a favor and I'll throw Rainier beer. That's kind of a Northwest kind of feel to the books. Walt drink Rainier. It was either Rainier or Ole. And so I did Rainier. And it was kind of funny because. When I did my first library event here in Wyoming, it was a little town over in Meteetse, over in the west part of the state. They said, what do you charge for an honoraria? And I said, once you reach a certain level of literary notoriety, it's very difficult to negotiate your own honoraria. And I said, I require a 6-pack of Rainier beer cans preferred. That was okay. But it got into all of the newspapers in Wyoming, and so subsequently, I have done every library in Wyoming. I've done all 63 libraries in Wyoming, and I haven't bought beer in about 7 years, so it's kind of worked out to be mutually beneficial for both parties, I think.
Hey, Craig, tell me, you used to be a patrolman in New York, is that right?
Yeah, I had an experience a long time ago as a special officer but that's very different from sheriffing and I owe a great deal of gratitude to an awful lot of the sheriffs here in Wyoming and up in Montana, because I've been able to do a lot of ride-alongs with them. It's a very, very different style of law enforcement. First of all, it's the only elected law enforcement official, so people really feel a kind of a connection to you. It's not like you're driving around with a pair of chrome sunglasses on, glaring at people or something.
Right.
A lot of times people will come storming into your office and say, "Hey, I voted for you and I've got a problem," and they want to tell you what their problem is. And that kind of fed into the whole idea of Walt, because I wanted him to be kind of connected with his community, and with the society whose laws that he was trying to enforce. And it was very, very interesting in a very rural kind of sense, because the books and I guess the TV show too, in many ways, it's kind of embodies a kind of anti-CSI, is kind of what it does. Because I think a lot of people get a kind of a funny idea of what police work is really like, especially in a rural area. I ran into a couple of DCI investigators here in Wyoming one time, and I was asking them, how long does it take you guys to get DNA evidence? And they said it took about 9 months. And so I was like, well, okay, well, that's not particularly honest then what they're doing in a lot of these TV shows and a lot of these books, you know, and they said, no, it's not really. Like, it's kind of difficult, you know, because it implants a kind of idea in people's heads that, you know, that you can just get DNA, you know, in 5 minutes
right.
and solve everybody's problems. And the technology and the amount of money that it takes to do those type of things, you know, really kind of has a backlog. And if you're in a rural county like Walt is, like, and I mean, Walt's portrayed in Absaroka County, like, at which is the least populated county in the least populated state in America. I mean, you have to remember that, you know, Wyoming only has 500,000 people in it.
Right.
It's only 500,000 people in the entire state of Wyoming. And, you know, that kind of makes for a unique kind of a situation. It's kind of a, you know, kind of out there on the frontier, you know, to a certain extent, you know. And so you don't have the social nets, like at the technological nets that you might have in a lot of other places. One of the things I laugh about is when people ask me and say, you know, why doesn't Walt carry a cell phone? You know, and my immediate response to that is, have you ever been to Wyoming?
Yeah. Where are you going to get cell phones?
No, I mean, unless you're going to take photos of you, you know, selfies with you and the pronghorn antelope, it really isn't much use. You know, most of the time you're out of service. There are only, I don't know, like 5 or 6 towers in the whole state, you know, so it's kind of difficult to utilize that, you know, to a great extent.
That's true. Let's go into Walt for just a minute, because he's such a fabulous character, and I know a lot of people wonder, where out of your brain did Walt come from?
A lot of times, you know, I mean, one of my favorite quotes is the one from Wallace Stegner, where he talks about, in that wonderful little book on writing and teaching fiction, where he says the greatest piece of fiction ever written is the disclaimer at the beginning of every book that says nobody in this book is based off anybody alive or
right,
dead.
Right.
And that, what a crock that is, you know, that, you know, that's your job, to go find interesting people and utilize
right.
them as characters in your books. Like, and you can do that to an extent, you know, with some characters, you know, but every once in a while you'll run into a character that is maybe a little bit, you know, more complex, look at, or maybe needs to be changed a little bit, you know, to fit the storytelling, you know, to try and tell the story that you're going to try and tell.
Mm-hmm.
And with Walt, you know, it was kind of that. You have to use a little bit of a Dr. Frankenstein method where, you know, you kind of have to take bits and pieces from a lot of different people and put them together to make the character to tell the story that you want to tell. And I think that's kind of what I did with Walt. With Walt, it was, you know, he's a little bit different, you know, from a lot of the law enforcement characters, a lot of the crime fiction characters that you tend to see nowadays. And I wanted him to be that way. Like, I wanted him to, you know, be well-read. I wanted him to be very caring about the people in his county. One of the things I heard over and over and over again from a lot of these sheriffs, you know, was my people, I got to take care of my people. And there's a real sense, you know, of connection there. And that's, you know, one of the things you can utilize, you know, a lot of the times, you know, because, I mean, it is a Western, you know, to a great extent. I mean, you know, you really have to look at the books and the television show, and it's no great mystery, like, at, you know, excuse the term, like, at, that, you know, they are Westerns, like, at, and I think one of the big mistakes that a lot of people make is kind of buying into that thought process that the West is the West, and everybody has to take care of themselves. Like, well, anybody who lives in a farming or ranching community knows that that's just not the way it works. You know, you really depend on your neighbors.
Right.
You know, I mean, anytime, you know, I mean, I've got a horse and a rope, like, and I've got a part-time job, you know, twice a year during branding and calving season, you know, where I'm helping, you know, the ranchers, you know, around my area. And I think that's kind of an important access, you know, point, you know, that these, you know, far-flung areas, people depend on each other more than they do maybe, you know, with the anonymity of, you know, being in a large urban area. And so I think, you know, for a lot of people, it's a little bit of a different breed of cat. And
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, that Walt kind of embodies a lot of the stoicism, like, at the end, but also the kind of hidden intelligence, like, that maybe, you know, people might not imagine. For me, another major element, I think, with the character is also the humor. You know, that Walt has a sense of humor,
right.
that all the characters have a sense of humor. I can always tell whenever somebody's, you know, writing crime fiction that's never been around cops before, because the characters are so serious. And anybody that's ever, like, you know, been around cops knows that anybody that's ever had a difficult job, anybody that's ever had a high pressure, difficult job like that knows that you got to keep your sense of humor,
right.
You know, because at the end of the day, you're going to do one of two things. You're either going to laugh or you're going to cry. And I know which one I'd rather do. And so it's kind of important, you know, for all of those characters to have that sense of humor. Mm-hmm. I mean, Henry has a very native, you know, sense of humor. You know, I mean, my ranch is just to the south of the Northern Cheyenne and the Crow Reservation. And I love, you know, those people. I love using, you know, the humor that they use. I mean, there's never been a group of individuals that's been more maligned as not having a sense of humor as much as the American Indian. I mean, they're always portrayed as these stoic cigar store, you know, kind of characters.
Right.
And that's not the Indians I know. The Indians I know work on about 17 different layers of irony, and if you're not aware of that irony, you get to be the butt of that irony. So, you know, for me, that's an important aspect, you know, of their character to use. And I do say Indian because, you know, my Northern Cheyenne buddies make fun of me when I try and be politically correct and say Native American. They always look at me and go, "Where were you born?" I was born in America. So you would be a Native American too then, wouldn't you? So,
yep.
You know, it's fun. It's fun to have those different styles of humor. I mean, Vic is obviously a product of the East. I mean, you know, she was a patrolman, you know, in Philadelphia,
right.
You know, on the hot track, like that, for a gold shield to be a detective. And then, you know, she just gave it all up, you know, and moved west. You know, she's got, you know, a unique voice, you know, I think a very urban voice in what would otherwise be, you know, very rural books. Like, and I think that that's, you know, she's an incredibly strong female character, you know, and Walt is kind of surrounded by all of these incredibly strong female characters. I mean, Ruby, who is his, you know, touchstone for
right.
communication, the dispatcher, who's exceedingly important, you know, Dorothy down over the hill that runs the Busy Bee Cafe as a source of information, you know, for, because any small town cop will tell you, the place where you get your information is at the bars and the cafes.
Absolutely.
That's where people talk. And so for me, it's important to have all of those characters, you know, be as well-rounded as they can be like that. But always the hinge point, the center point to the stories will always be Walt, simply because the books are written in first person, you
mm-hmm.
know. And so you're kind
right.
of in Walt's head, you know, for 300 pages.
Like right.
So for me, that's got to be a fun place to be, or else, you know, it'd be a desolate landscape if that wasn't the case.
Right. Now, your storylines, I don't know where you come up with your storylines. It's just like every book is so different, but they're all interlinked.
Well, they're grounded, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're grounded in the reality of the American West, you know, and then that's, you know, the Mountain West, you know, and I think a lot of that has to come. I have to be, you know, totally honest with you and tell you one of my dirty little secrets. And one of my dirty little secrets is the majority of the storylines for my books tend to come from newspaper articles. wherever I go, like across Wyoming, like in Montana, I'm always picking up small town newspapers like that, because what I've noticed is that small town newspapers will print things and print them in different ways than large town newspapers. Well, they'll print stuff. There's no way a large newspaper would ever print.
Sure.
Because they would be sued, you know, one end of their lives to the other. Like, and so they're really incredible, you know, sources of, you know, of a reality. Because I don't ever really want to have Walt, I don't ever have Walt on a cruise ship. I don't want to ever have Walt,
no.
You know, on a skateboard, you know, or any of that goofy stuff. I want him dealing with the things that, you know, Western sheriffs deal with. And I think that gives a kind of a grounded quality to the books and to the characters that makes them a little bit more believable than, like, you know, a lot of the wild stuff that, you know, that just doesn't really have any basis in fact.
Right.
When you write your books, you mentioned, and like I said, I haven't read the new book yet, but you mentioned about two timelines kind of going side by side, but they're linked.
Mm-hmm.
And in
mm-hmm.
The Dark Horse, it took me just a little bit to catch on, because you would say, okay, here's something that's happening now, and then suddenly it's 4 days prior, and then you talk about
mm-hmm.
that, then you come back to present, and you go 3 days prior. And so I found that very interesting. I'm wondering, do you like playing with the time a lot?
I actually do. Any kind of excuse I can get to bust up the narrative, you know, I mean, you're always like, look, everybody talks about breaking the narrative and all this type of thing, but I think that the only time that you can truly get away with it is if it really enhances the sense of a book. You know,
uh-huh.
just doing it to do it, you know, really doesn't make any sense. But I think that if, you know, the storytelling will really be enhanced, if the story itself will truly be enhanced, you know, by, and I tend to call it writing Roman, you know, I don't know if you remember the old rodeo acts, you know, where the cowboy cowboy would be, where the cowgirl would be come charging into the arena on two horses and be standing
one foot
on each saddle.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I refer to those type of books, you know, because you're basically telling two stories. But boy, they better not get out of sync or you're going to have problems really quick. And, you know, for me, that's a lot of it. Like, I mean, they also have to have a matched pacing, you know, so that, you know, that each one of them, you know, reaches a certain crescendo at the same time, like that, you know, it reaches a denouement. I mean, all of these things, you know, kind of come into play as to where, you know, that story's going to go. But I think it's a unique kind of thing. I don't overdo it. I think I use the timeline break, you know, with a very much smaller timeline break in Dark Horse, and then a much larger one in Another Man's Moccasins. But what kind of makes this one a little bit different from any of the others before is, and certainly from Another Man's Moccasins, was with Another Man's Moccasins, it was two mysteries that were happening at the same time. A young Vietnamese woman is found on the side of the highway in Wyoming, and she's been murdered. And this kind of clicks back to Walt's first homicide investigation as a Marine investigator back in Vietnam in 1967 at Tanzanite Air Force Base. And, you know, believe it or not, the two cases are actually connected. And it was kind of interesting for me to, you know, use those two mysteries and play them out and see if I could get, you know, the design and the basis of them so that I could keep the pacing and all of those things and the reveals for each story, like as I went along. And I don't know, the Western Star, the one that comes out in September 5th, it's actually a little bit different in the sense that the older story, look at the one from, you know, 1972, is kind of a straight-ahead mystery, and in many ways kind of an homage to Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express.
Exactly.
A murder mystery that takes place on a train, you better be aware of Murder on the Orient Express, you know, because that's always going to be, you know, the one that you're going to be compared to. But then the other story, the contemporary story, is a little bit more of a thriller, actually. Like, you don't quite know who did it like that, but it's kind of a train wreck, you know, as to that you're speeding towards, you know, as this other story unfolds in Walt's backstory. Like, and so it's kind of an intertwined mystery and thriller at the same time.
Well, it is. And that's the first thing I caught with the older story on Western Star was that it was wonderful because it was a murder on the Orient Express. Except it was a murder on the Wyoming Express.
It was. Well, even to the point where Walt actually buys a copy of Murder on the Orient Express at the depot there.
And he's carrying it around with him.
Cheyenne, and has it stuffed in his back pocket. And as he's climbing on the train, it falls out of his pocket, and one of the other sheriffs picks it up, looks at it, and looks at Walt and says, you studying up? Like that, you know, and Walt says, well, ever since I got back from Vietnam, I kind of need a book that with me at all times, like to kind of distract me a little bit, you know.
Yep.
And you know, he hands him the book, the older sheriff does, and he says, well, she kind of had it figured out, didn't she? And Walt says, I don't know what you mean. Like, and he goes, well, hell, there's only so many permutations to the whole thing, you know. He did it, she did it, they all did it, nobody did it.
Right?
And then he looks at him and says, have you finished that book yet? And Walt says, no. And he says, we'll talk when you get done.
Yeah, it's a great story, and I was finishing it, and I was just, like I said, I got to the last page, and I kept wanting another page, and I'm going, oh no.
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever, you know, gotten to the end of a book, look at, and there's a strong sense of foreboding like that
really truly is
storm clouds on the horizon like that, and some serious things are going to be happening, and the next book is actually called The Depth of Winter, and I'm actually into chapter 15 on it, so it's flying along like at a miraculous pace.
It's going to be linked to this one, I hope.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay. Oh yes. It picks up, you know, pretty quickly right after that one ends.
We have to find out what's going on.
Do you find yourself, Craig, do you find
yourself... Without giving it away.
Exactly.
I was going to ask you, Craig, do you find yourself getting to a point, and I don't know that that's something that happens now or in the future, that you might be getting bored with Walt and you want to change path?
You know, I was really, really concerned with that whenever I started writing the books, because the first book, The Cold Dish, really wasn't a series kickoff. It was a standalone novel is what it was. It was just going to be, you know, a Western piece of literature like that happened to be a mystery. And it was interesting like that because I got picked up by Viking Penguin, and one of the great things in my life was I got teamed up with Catherine Court, who is the president of Penguin USA. And she's my editor at Viking, and she's the one that sat me down and said, you know, we think you should look at this, you know, as the potential for, you know, starting a series. We think that these characters and this place and these relationships, you know, there's just so much more there that we're going to want to know. Look at, and so we think that you should consider, you know, the possibility of maybe continuing on with these stories. And that's when I, with the knowledge of not even having had one book published, started arguing with the president of Penguin USA and going, oh, I don't think that's a great idea, but I've got some other ideas I want to bounce off of you. And she said, why don't you go back to your ranch and think about this? You know, so I did. You know, thank goodness. Look at it, and I thought, well, you know, yeah, I'd like to know some of the backstory and some of the other stories about these characters. And I thought, well, you idiot, nobody else is going to write that, so you're going to have to be the one to sit down and do it. And that's when the series kind of kicked in. And I don't know. I think I was extraordinarily lucky, to find Walt Longmire, because I have barely scratched the surface of the depths, you know, of that character. Uh-huh. He's so wonderfully utilitarian in being able to allow me to approach so many different subjects, to approach so many different situations, to take on so many different plots, you know, and so many different facets of not only his character like that, but also the characters of, you know, all of the people that populate the novels around him. Mm-hmm. That I have written 13 of these novels, two novellas, and an entire collection of short stories, and I have yet to scratch the surface. There just seems to be so much more to do with him. He's a very satisfying character to write. Mm-hmm. You know, and in a lot of ways, a lot of that comes from the fact that he's decent. He's a good guy. He cares about people. He's intelligent. He's well-read. You know, he's got a good sense of humor like that. But the big thing is that he also has a code that he lives by.
Exactly.
And one of the reasons why, you know, Greer Shepherd was explaining to me that they wanted to do a TV show based on the character was they said, you know, she said, well, I feel like, you know, that, you know, since we've kind of done this like anti-hero thing since the 1960s, like it, and it's kind of run its course to the point where, you know, it's hard to tell the good guys from the bad guys anymore. And she said, I kind of feel like that, you know, people are kind of like looking and searching, you know, for a guy that's a stand-up guy. You know, what my grandfather used to refer to as a guy who covered the ground he stood on, somebody you could count on, somebody who stood by his word. And I think that that's, you know, one of the things that makes Walt, you know, so much more enjoyable, you know, so much more fun to, you know, to continue to write about.
Sure.
And I don't see any horizon like that, you know, where I'm going to, like, stop writing about Walt anymore. I've kind of given up on that. I'm probably going to write Walt until I collapse over top of the typewriter, and that's the end.
Yeah, or, you know, fall down the stairs and die in your 25-person down.
You never know. You never
so,
know.
So the answer to that question, Craig, was no.
No, I don't think so. Like, I mean, I people sometimes ask me, they'll say, well, do you ever think about writing another series? Do you ever think about writing another mystery series?
No.
I have to admit that I don't. I you know, Walt, you know, just, you know, serves all of the purposes, you know, for writing, you know, the mystery series that I want to write. Am I going to write other things? Yeah, absolutely. I've got a psychological thriller that I'm writing. I've got a piece of literary fiction that I'm writing. I've got a period Western that I'm writing. So I've got a bunch of other different pieces that I'm writing that I've started on like that, but you know, Walt keeps luring me back. You know, I think that, you know, if I didn't write a Walt book every year, I think everybody would come looking for me in New Cross, Wyoming.
Well, probably. We're going to have to cut you short. We're running out of time. The book is Western Star. It is going to be available September 5th, and Craig will be at the Orange County Book Carnival at 7 p.m. And then Wednesday, September 6th, he'll be in Rancho Mirage, California, at the Rancho Mirage Library. And then from there, he's going all over the United States.
I am.
What did you say? 3 weeks,
right? For about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Look at, but I got to admit, I really enjoy it. I mean, other than writing the books, one of my favorite things to do is go out and actually meet the people that are, you know, interested, you know, in the characters and want to talk about the books and all that. If there's a downside to that, I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But how many times can you listen to some? I mean, yes, accolades are great, but how many times can you listen to someone say, I really enjoyed the book, thank you. I really enjoyed the book. It was a great character, thank you.
Well, generally, I'll ask them why. Like, you know, I'll just say, sure. You know, I'll just be honest with you. Like, if they say, I really enjoyed this one, I really love this book, and I'll ask them, I'll say, why? Mm. You know, I'll put them on the spot, like, and say why. And generally, they can give you very detailed answers, you know, as to what it is that they really like. Like, are there are also people that come to the signings, like, there might be something that they didn't like about the book that they want to talk to you about,
sure.
You know, and get more ideas, like, about what's in your head, like that, and or something that they found confusing or something like that. And I'm always happy to be there to be able to talk with them. It's for me, that's a blast. You know, what a joy, what a life.
There you go. Well, Craig, if you wouldn't mind giving our listeners your email and where they can get a hold of you and all
absolutely
the good stuff.
It's pretty easy. Look at you just go to craigallenjohnson.com, craigallenjohnson.com, like it, and you hit the contact button. That's my email here in Ucross. Like,
there
I always
go.
Laugh because the emails always start off with whoever it is responsible for answering Mr. Johnson's emails, and I'm always standing here in northern Wyoming looking at the computer going, well, that would be me.
And they're available on Amazon and booksellers and
we are everywhere. We're like
man.
Cockroaches.
Good
the
man.
Books are everywhere. And that sixth season of Longmire's coming out later in September too.
Yes.
Like that. So we're kind of a 1-2 punch here this September.
And my wife Jerry, who actually has also booked you on the show, also wanted you to know that if this is the last season for Longmire, she's going to be very upset.
Well, you know what? We've been hearing all of these rumors that that they're going to be leaving, like, a little bit of an opening there at the end of this sixth season, because I guess there have been millions of people like that have signed up for Netflix that you know, don't want Longmire to go away. And so we've heard little rumors about the potential, you know, for you know, possible TV movies and all of that. And so it may not be the very last ride for the sheriff. So
okay.
keep your fingers crossed.
We're good. Hey, Craig, thanks for coming on with us. It's been a hoot, as it always is. And we come back and see us when you get another one done?
Oh, absolutely. I'd be delighted.
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks so much.
You betcha. My pleasure. You guys take care of yourselves.
Okay. Okay. Take care, Craig. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Craig Johnson. What a great guy.
Boy, he can talk.
He can.
And he keeps you riveted the entire time.
And he writes well as well.
Yes.
Next week, our guest is Mike Bond. He's the one that wrote that big, thick Assassins.
Oh, yes, yes.
And Snow, he'll be on with us tomorrow, next Thursday. And September 7th, of course, is our two-hour special show with Richard Palinelli and Kathleen Rogers and other writers and publishers and agents that we do hope to call in. And for just a teaser for right now, in next year we have Bianca Murray, her book Hum, if you don't know the words. It's about growing up in South Africa as a young child during the apartheid era. And then as a big, huge bonus, following Bianca Murray is Mr. John Sanford. He's the author of the Prey novels, Lucas Davenport and Virgil Flowers and all those folks there. So that's going to be, it's coming up next year. I want to quickly thank Target Freight for their continuing support with the Writer's Block. I want to thank Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. I want to thank West and Mr. Russ Avison for coming in every fourth Thursday and joining in the madness here.
Wouldn't miss
it.
I enjoyed this studio. Tremendously. I thank you so much for the opportunity to do it.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. And tonight's show was just like, wow.
I know. I looked up. Wait, we're out of time. What happened?
I know. That's where I was going. Where to go? Anyway, we will be back next Thursday with Mike Bond. And it's proving to be a great show because Mike is an outstanding writer. And that's it for us. We'll be back next Thursday. Same bat time, same bat channel. And y'all have yourselves a great evening.